But then I remember what we discussed in our previous classes.
Lord is all pure goodness. In material world, there is always goodness, personalism, but there is pure goodness. In the material world, is all good.
Any other points?
For spiritual progress, one must develop a detachment from the material world and simultaneously develop an attraction to the spiritual world. And Bhagavatam is trying to develop that attraction to the spiritual world. By describing the spiritual world in detail.
What is that in relation to?
The Lord, after cleaning himself, goes back to the spiritual world. That's what Uttav.
Eternal.
Any other point?
Vaishnava is like a water. He settles at the bottom. Similar to the Dharmada offering the wings to Indra, even though he was much more powerful than him.
Anything else?
Even when it comes to the pastimes of Lord, listen to the Bhagavatam, right? So they got extraordinary merit, strength and longevity. And if one listens to a time of death, transfer to the Supreme Lord.
The benediction of the Stuti Sar, final verse of the chapter. Mm-hmm. Many wonderful benedictions just from hearing the Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the ultimate self-improvement course. Any other point?
The spiritual knowledge should come from a parampara system, and that actually becomes much more sweeter as it goes along with life.
That was one of the main themes the Prabhupada made in the last section. The importance of hearing in specific successions. One must hear from someone who is connected to the previous spiritual masters, going all the way back to Lord Krishna. And the qualification is that the present acharya does not change anything which he is speaking from what has been spoken previously. That is the qualification. Prabhupada said that is my only qualification. I have not changed anything which I heard from my spiritual master. Any other points?
Yes, in Vaikuntha, every day is a Mahotsav.
Just like tomorrow is the Mahotsav. One of the most important days of the year for the Gaudiya Vaishnava calendar is Nityananda. Sri Nityananda Prabhu Ki
Jai. Yes.
We won't be having Bhakti Bazaar, but there'll be some other kind of friends and little nectar. So please come. Please come. What's that? Tomorrow? I don't think so. I'll see you tomorrow. I make a problem. It is too controversial, we cannot enter into the secret. We used to do it, but I used to get in trouble every year. So, any other points? So we see in the last two chapters that we covered, we were carrying on from last year, in which we discussed the appearance of Varahadev. Now Lord Varahadev appeared because Swayambhuva Manu was requested by Lord Brahma to populate the universe, begin religious principles, to practice Dharma, to teach Dharma, to establish Yajna, to establish Varnashram Dharma, in order to uplift the citizens. But then Swayambhuva Manu said to Lord Brahma that the earth has sunk into the bottom of the Galadaka ocean. So therefore it is not possible at this point in time for me to perform my service. At that point in time Lord Varahadev appeared. And then he expanded, and the chapters describe chapter 16, 17, 18, 19, describe the appearance of Lord Varaha, and we've just concluded with his transcendental battle with the demon Hiranyaksha, and ultimately destroying and killing that demon Hiranyaksha. So we've just completed this chapter. So this is continuing from where we left off last year. Now, tonight we'll begin chapter 20. Chapter 20, Vidura then once again inquires for Maitreya. What is the title of chapter 20? Conversation between Maitreya and Vidura. So Vidura then requests Maitreya, what is the situation or what activities does Swayambhu Manu perform? Now he's backtracking or going back to what he was what was originally being told about Swayambhu Manu, about his pastimes of populating the universe on behalf of his father, Lord Brahma. So this will be the discussion topic at this point in time in the Bhagavad Gita. Now this will evolve with the descendants of Swayambhu Manu. And the next three cantos, Canto 3, the remainder of Canto 3, Canto 4, and Canto 5, will discuss the descendants of Swayambhu Manu and the pastimes of these descendants. Kadama, Devahuti, Priyavrata, Rukanapa, all these different personalities will be discussed in the next three cantos. So please stick around. We may have a few more classes.
Yes, sir.
Okay. So tonight we'll discuss verses 1, 2, 17.
So actually there's quite a lot in this section. Okay,
so we'll begin to go through it. And if you have any questions, you can ask as we go.
Shrishonaka inquired, O Suta Goswami,
after the earth was again situated in its orbit, what did Swayambhu Manu do to show the path of liberation to persons who were to take birth later on?
So Prabhupada points out in the purport
that Swayambhu Manu is one of the 12 Mahajanas. Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, the four Kumaras,
Yamaraj,
Janakaraj, yes. Bhishma, yes. Prahlad, Narada, Shukadev, Nipila, Manu, the Kumaras, you said the Kumaras. Bali, Prahlad, Bhishma,
Rama,
Yama.
Not
Yama?
Shiva?
Yama.
Shiva?
Yeah. Shiva?
Yeah.
I remember them in order. I have an order in which I remember them and I forget the 12. Maybe because you're all saying them out of order.
What is
the
order?
Huh?
What is the order?
Usually I remember Brahma, Shiva, Narada, the Kumaras, Kapila. Now I've got a thing. Because it's hot. I just came all the way in the car from Geelong and suddenly right on my side the whole way, so my hand is like, oh, this is right. Okay, where was up to? Kumaras, Kapila, Manu, Prahlad, Janak, Bhishma, Yama,
Bali,
Bali, we didn't say Bali yet. Bali? Yama's the 12, and there's one more. Jana? Did we say Jana? Shukadev. Shukadev, okay. And that's all. That's the 12. Normally I remember. But tonight I'm a little...
Okay, so these are the 12 Mahajans. And Manu
is one of the 12 Mahajans. And he has compiled the very essential Vedic scripture called the Manu Samhita. Manu is the father of mankind. In the Bible, we have the equivalent, we have
Adam. Adam is said to be in the original man, the father of mankind, Adam. Manu.
Right? And this is derived from the Vedic tradition. That Manu is the father of mankind, his original personality, and his samhita, or his instructions, which are recorded, are the guidelines for all of humanity. Right? All of humanity must follow the guidelines which are within the Manu Samhita. So this book is very important. It's very essential. Bhaktivinoda Puri Maharaj has given many lectures on the Manu Samhita. If you listen to those lectures, very interesting subject matter. Talks all about Dharma. Manu instructs us all about different types of Dharma. Dharma for brahmacharis, for grihasthas. I'm trying to think. Seven types of Vedic marriages, which are a lot of detail about brahmacharis. Four types of sannyasis.
The law four out of the
It means for every vana, for every ashram, all the instructions are given within the Manu Samhita. So this is extremely important knowledge for humanity. Now, within Kali Yuga, we find that
people are unable to follow these things so easily. So Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has simplified the entire system, Vedic system, and he has just taken the essence of that system. As Krishna was mentioning in the Bhagavad Gita in the second chapter, that all purposes which are served by a small body of water, a small well, are immediately served by a large reservoir. So the essence of all the Vedic knowledge is to become a pure devotee of Lord Krishna. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu emphasizes this and teaches us this in Kali Yuga to simplify the entire Vedic system. To simply engage in Sankirtan Yogya. Because within the Manu Samhita and the Vedic literature, there's so much information about different types of yajna. So much elaborate sacrifice. So many rules, so many regulations that humans must follow. As we said previously, Prabhupada once said, if I told you all the rules, I think I was saying in the Bhagavatam class last week, Tuesday morning, I was giving Bhagavatam class, then I was explaining that Prabhupada said, if I told you all of the rules, you would faint. So sometimes they think, oh, there's so many rules. Prabhupada said, if I told you all the rules, you would faint. Prabhupada is just giving the essence. Mahaprabhu is giving you essence. And the entire system is simplified into the Sankirtan Yajna. By the performance of Sankirtan, you will get all the perfections. Param Vijayate, Sri Krishna, Sankirtanam. So, by following Shastra, Prabhupada explains within the purport, by following Shastra, by following the regulations which Manu is teaching, this regulates the human being and uplifts his consciousness towards liberation. Because the nature of the conditioned soul is that he is addicted to sense gratification. Right? All conditioned souls are addicted to sense gratification. They want to enjoy their senses separate from Krishna. So, because everyone is addicted and has this type of consciousness, then Manu teaches you how to regulate your sense gratification. Right? Practice some restriction, some restraint, some control, some regulation to purify your senses gradually and to gradually, simultaneously, while satisfying your desire for sense gratification, simultaneously leading you towards liberation, all right, or spiritually purifying your consciousness. This is what is taught by Manu. No? You have a desire to enjoy your senses? Okay, get married, enter into rehab for life, have some children, right? Enjoy your senses, but at the same time, perform spiritual activity to gradually elevate and purify your consciousness. This is the Lord's mercy. And Krishna says in the Bhagavad Gita, Dukala Yama Shashwatam. So whatever you think you're going to enjoy doesn't really happen anymore. Mm-hmm. But because you're addicted to it then. Any questions, comments?
Would that be the same as Karma Yoga then, what he said? Because Karma Yoga is the same thing, isn't it?
Karma Yoga?
Yeah.
Karma Yoga means performing activities but then dovetailing them in Krishna service.
Isn't that what Ramana Samhita is saying about this? Doing activities?
Yeah, connecting it to God, yeah. That's Karma Yoga.
One of the modules is
one of them.
Which one was it? There are several manus.
Any manu.
Okay.
Yeah, Vaivaswata. Presently, Prabhupada explains in the next couple of the present manu is called Vaivaswata manu, the present manu. 72 in a day for a month. Like that. So, 14 in a day for a month. 72 yugas each. Like that. So, it means that. The present one is called the Swamibhu. It means whoever the manu is a position. So therefore, the manu sumita will be repeated again and again and again by the particular manu in order to, just like Krishna speaks the Gita, again and again and again, like that. So manu sumita is spoken again and again. So the particular manu, it depends on which one it is.
I remember hearing this in Prabhupada's lecture. He said Swambhu Shambhu Nara when he was quoting all the Swam Bhajan.
Uh-huh.
So Swambhu Nara.
It's mentioned Swambhu in...
Yeah, I remember in one of the lectures.
Yeah, so that's in the sixth canto.
Yeah.
Sixth canto Yamaraj lists the 12 Mahajans. That's where the list is given in the sixth canto. So yeah, he said Swambhu at that time. Swambhu Mahajan. Meaning that they are the origin of man, or that the traditions. That means if you cross the traditions, you'll see that it is the same personality they're being spoken of. Adam is allegorical, so he's not a jiva. He's allegorical. He's a story. There's no Adam. There was never a garden.
It's a story of Jiva, it's not a story of...
Have you read the Bible? Have you read the Bible?
Well,
have you read the Bible?
No, Vishnu Tattva cannot...
Have you read the Bible?
Yes, I have read, and I
know. Okay, so Adam, the story is allegorical. It's just a story. There was no Adam, there was no Eve, there was no snake. There was no apple.
Yeah, but still we can't compare them because Adam is...
Oh, Rasa. Rasa, I just rode in the car for an hour and a half in the hot sun. It's the best I can do tonight. Any other questions?
Isn't that the process in every age for Jiva to go back to God? I'm wondering, can a Jiva go back to God in the age of Satyayuga following Sankirtan Jagra?
Yeah. Sankirtan Jagra is always there in all of the yugas. But Jiva Goswami points out in Kali Yuga, it is especially effective and it becomes prominent in Kali Yuga. In the other yugas, people, their nature is more suited to a particular type of dharma or type of religious activity. In such yuga, it's more suited for people to meditate. It's more their nature that they do that. Right, and then in the next, then it's more suitable for the jagyas, and then more suitable for the deity worship. But in Kali Yuga, all the previous is not suitable. So then it becomes very prominent. Although it's always there, and one can attain perfection by it in any yuga. Like that. But Jiva Goswami says in Kali Yuga is especially, suitable. For Sankirtan Jagya, because the jivas are always suffering. So when you're suffering, then you tend to chant more sincerely. You may notice in your chanting, when you're going through periods of suffering, you begin to chant more seriously, more attentively. Like that. So that is the nature of Kali Yuga. There's enough suffering here to get us, you know, to develop like a seriousness in the chanting. So therefore it is specially meant for the Kali Yuga. Any other points?
Manu gives the Manu Samhita in every yuga cycle because 72 times during his lifetime, the yuga cycle is changed.
Yes, there's a partial destruction after each one. So then, yeah, he gives, whenever it's reinvented, then he'll re-speak. Yeah, sure. I mean, because if there's a partial annihilation of pralaya, then he needs to re-speak it. So whenever there's a pralaya, then there's a, you know, all the knowledge has to be spoken again and all these things. Manu will speak to his, like, he's a Prajapati. So whoever is the next generation of him, that means his children, basically. Because he's the Prajapati, he's the one who populates the universe. So when he gives the children, you know, and he has very prominent children, then he speaks to them and they will speak to the next generation. That's how it begins to go through the universe. So.
May I?
Yes. You may.
My comment might sound ignorant, but you said Manu is equivalent to Adam. And then you said Adam, not Adam or Eve or the serpent exist. So why do they teach these things? Why they said we suffer because Adam has the bite of the apple or whatever?
Yeah. It's an allegory. Allegory means a story which explains some philosophy.
I made a note of that word to check in dictionary.
Yeah, allegory.
Yeah, it's
a
Latin word, but...
Yeah, it's like even in the Bhagavad Gita there's allegory. Mm-hmm. Allegory means sometimes there'll be, just like we have one about the city of nine gates. These are called allegory. It means an example to explain something. Not that it's actually true, but it's like a story to explain a point, a philosophical point.
Analogy.
Analogy, yeah.
Analogy, okay. But they are teaching. I was taught when I was growing up to believe this.
It yeah, but their knowledge is a little
ancient. Forgive me, I don't know anything.
Yeah, but the problem with the Christianity at this point is that the disciplic succession is not intact. As this is what we were explaining, Prabhupada was explaining last week, the disciplic succession must be intact. Since Jesus spoke, what was spoken has not been passed on purely, so therefore there is some confusion now. So they don't know what is allegory, what is not allegory. They say Adam and Eve were actually there. But if you have this knowledge passed on in disciplic succession, then you can understand these things very easily. You can only say, oh, this is allegory, this is true, like that.
It's honest.
It is, but they're confused. They don't actually understand now. So.
And they've changed Bibles so many times.
Yeah.
And I know one lady, she said, I wanted to give the Bible to my children. She said, Mom, this is not valid, we have a new Bible. And she was like, how do you mean you have a new Bible? And it was in history, I mean, if you talk about Bible, only shortly, you know, like this Jerome, who actually everyone is basing Bible on, He had many copies, and they were all many different, and he didn't know, and he was saying, tomorrow someone will tell me that I was falsifying.
See, in the original Bible they said Manu and Eve.
Are you serious?
No, I threw that in for Okay. Shaunika Rishi inquired about the Yuga. He was a great devotee and friend of Lord Krishna, and who gave up the company of his elder brother because the latter, along with his sons, played tricks against the desires of the Lord. The Prabhupada teaches that basic point of Vaishnava etiquette. When regarding ourselves, Mahaprabhu taught us to teach to wear the around our neck the shloka, or the verse, Trinada Pisa Nichina, Trinada Pisa Hishnuna, Amanina, Manadena, Kiritanya Hasada, Ari. Which means the Vaishnava should always be wearing that verse around his neck. One should be more humble than a blade of grass. One should be more tolerant than a tree. One should be devoid of false prestige. One should be ready to offer all respect to others. And in such a state of mind, one can chant the holy name of the Lord constantly. So this is the Siddha Pranali Mantra, or the Mantra of Perfection for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, for the followers of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. he's instructed he must always wear that. So that is the mood of the bodhi. So this is Vaishnava etiquette. It means when we are insulted, we don't take it so personally. We promise to the best of our ability. We must practice like that. But if Krishna is insulted, offended, or if another devotee is offended, then we may become angry as much as necessary in order to protect Krishna's reputation or that devotee's reputation. That is the mood of the Vaishnava. For ourselves, we are tolerant, but for others, we will be very active. So therefore, when Vidura was saying that Dhritarashtra and Duryodhana were offending Krishna and offending the Pandavas, then he just left. He gave up their association, even though they were family. Vidura was born for the body of Veda Vyas and was not less than he. Thus he accepted the lotus feet of Krishna wholeheartedly and was attached to his devotees. So, Prabhupada points out in the purport that Vidura is also a very
old
as good as Veda Vyas. Vidura is actually a Mahajan. He's actually an incarnation of
Yamaraj.
So he's one of the 12 Mahajans. Manu is a Mahajan, and similarly Vidura is also a Mahajan. Okay. So whatever is spoken by Vidura can be seen as being Bhagavat. Can be seen as being Bhagavat or Bhagavata. He's one of the great keepers of religion.
Okay.
Oh, sorry. Mm-hmm. Vidura was born to the body of Veda Vyasa. So also was Dhritarashtra and Pandu, isn't it? He grew up at this world. Yeah. So then how come Dhritarashtra was not attached to Krishna? I'm not sure why he's not attached to Krishna. Even like Srila Prabhupada, his children were not all great devotees.
Mm-hmm.
But that Bhaktivinoda Thakur, but that there's much on the people. Advaita Acharya. And Advaita Acharya's son, some of his sons were Mayavadis. Like that. But it's not that the great souls will necessarily give birth to devotees. Okay. It's just it's the nature of the material world. Okay. That's as much as I can.
Not so at the time of conceiving the other two were very difficult for that activity.
Shonak inquired about the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. There must have been many narrations of the spotless pastimes of the Lord. The hearing of such narrations is exactly like bathing in the water of the
existence.
Why don't you tell me? Wait till I think I'll work before I start smiling. Vidura was purified of all passion by wandering in sacred places. And at last he reached Hardwar, where he met the great sage who knew the science of spiritual life. He inquired from him, Shaunaka Rishi. Shaunaka Rishi therefore asked, what more did Vidura inquire from Maitreya? So Prabhupada points out in the first paragraph that one must go to a holy place for the purpose of in the first paragraph he says we must go there to get purified. That is the purpose. We must go to the holy places to purify our consciousness. That is the only reason to visit the holy places. Not that you go to the holy places for some other reason. Just for some other reason. You should not go. If you go to Prabhupada, there are many holy places, but for the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, three are prominent. Mayapur, Jagannath Puri, and Vrindavan. These are the most prominent of the three holy places.
So that's why you go there every day to be purified.
Every year. I'd like to go every year.
Yeah.
It costs a lot. I go every day. Plus, the plane doesn't always get back in time for Mangalati. Teresa came with me to Vrindavan, Mayapur, and Puri in 2003. Yeah, 2003. This is one of my old friends. So, to go to Mayapur and Puri and Vrindavan, the Gaudiya Vaishnavas, is the most important holy places. But the only reason we go there is to become
purified
in consciousness. Otherwise, there's no point to go there. Now, it's not a whimsical place. It's not a place for sense enjoyment. Like that. So, Prabhupada says that we should make a plan to go there in our life. There should be a regular plan to go there and become purified. And then Srila Prabhupada points out that, especially in your old age, you should begin to spend more time there. You should make a plan that when you get older, because the advantage of going to the holy places, like Vrindavan, it purifies your consciousness. That's why we must go there regularly as devotees. We must go to Vrindavan, to Mayapur, to purify our consciousness so that we can continue in our devotional service with enthusiasm. And, especially when you get to old age, you must work on purifying our consciousness. Just like Vidura had been in the court of the gurus for many, 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 many years. But when it gets to a certain age and he understood that the situation was no longer favourable, then he renounced, and for 30 years he travelled to all the different holy places to purify his consciousness, because he was preparing for the final moments of death. So Prabhupada points out that this is the purposes of visiting the holy places. Now in the second paragraph, Prabhupada points out that one must hear from the You must hear from self-realized thoughts, from sati. This is the point of going to the Dharma. Not that you go to the Dharma. Prabhupada says you don't just go there to bathe in the sacred rivers. That is there. That is auspicious. But if you do not go to the holy Dharma, and if you do not receive the association of the advanced Vaishnavas, the sadhus, then you will not get sufficiently purified. This is our main reason for going to the holy Dharma, to contact it. Now Srila Prabhupada points out that one who is very advanced, he may not need to go to the holy Dharma. Because if one is very advanced, he may not have to go there, because it will be sufficient for him to simply engage in hearing and chanting. And then he may not have to go there to get purified, right? You can sufficiently purify your consciousness simply by hearing and chanting, if you're very advanced. I don't feel I'm that advanced. That's why I go to the Holy Dharma. Because I feel like if I don't go to the Holy Dharma, I feel like it's very difficult for me to maintain my devotional service. That's why I try to endeavor to go there as much as possible. But if you're a very advanced devotee, you can absorb yourself in hearing and chanting. You can get the same benefit as visiting the Holy Dharma. All the benefits which are there. The Prabhupada says in the third paragraph that if one is very sincere, Brahmanda Brahmite, Kuna Bhagyavana Ji, Guru Krishna Prasadi Pai Bhakti Madhu Vija, that if you are very sincere, Krishna will lead you to the holy place and will lead you into the association of advanced devotees. The Prabhupada points that you must have the qualifications within your heart. If you are very sincere, then Krishna will lead you, and Prabhupada says he will give you the intelligence
to understand that the association of these personalities is, are the personalities I should take advantage of. So it all depends on your sincerity. If you're truly sincere, then Krishna will guide you, towards the proper association inside the holy dharmas and outside the holy. Any questions?
You mentioned that one should plan to spend more time in the holy places during the old days.
Yeah.
So this practice is very prominent in India.
Yeah.
Where people always engage in the normal life or mental activities. But during the old days, they spend a lot of time in the place of worship and all. So what sort of advancement they can make, which is slightly different from the Gaudiya Vaishnava, where we practice the devotional service right from the beginning. So what sort of advancement is being made?
Well, they're making advancement, but the point is that you want to make as much advancement as you can. See, we're spending our whole lives, like now, we may only be in our 30s or in our 40s or our 50s, but we're seriously taking up Krishna consciousness now, because by the time we get to 50 to 60, maybe to 70, if we practice seriously our whole life, we'll be at a much higher point at that time that we can make more advancement at that point. You don't want to really begin your spiritual life at 50 or 60 or 70. By 50 or 60 or 70, you want to already be quite advanced. So then you can make further advancement at that point. So that's why Mahaprabhu emphasizes that you should take up Krishna consciousness immediately. The Bhagavad Gita emphasizes you should take it up immediately. The beginning of the second canto, remember we discussed the beginning of the second canto? It described that by the rising and setting of every sun, then another day is lost. So in each day that we're here on earth, we can make so much advancement in Krishna consciousness. If we're serious, we can make so much advancement. So we should apply ourselves very seriously so that we are making proper advancement. So that in our old age we can enter more deeply into proper realization. Prabhupada said that you must rid yourself of the effects of passion and ignorance. So that when you get to the age of retirement, you can situate yourself practically in the mode of goodness, and then you can begin to practice spiritual life effectively. So you must overcome these low modes in your earlier years. So that takes a lot of practice. It means you must be very active in Krishna service. Prabhupada said you must burn up all of your energy. So that when you get to old age, then you're finished. Not that so your mind is still thinking about material things. And you must overcome the mode of ignorance, or the tendency to be lethargic. If you don't become serious, you won't become serious when you're older. It doesn't just magically happen. Just like my mother said to me when I was 19, I came home and I said, I'm going to become a Hare Krishna. And she said, you can do that when you're older.
But Prabhupada himself, he started when he was already, what, 68 or
60? No, he came to America when he was 69.
So he was already practicing that before, but...
Since he was 30, like that. Mm-hmm. Actually, since he was a child.
Mm-hmm.
Remember when we went to Prabhupada Samadhi in Mayapur? Mm-hmm. And we saw the dioramas in the top? And there's when Prabhupada was pushing the Ratha Yatra. Mm-hmm. He was having a festival when he was a boy.
Mm-hmm.
So Prabhupada was practicing his whole life. But he came to America when he was 69.
Yes.
Okay.
What happened if somebody was not introduced to that early enough, like myself?
Prabhupada says that it is not how you begin the race, it is how you finish the race. In the Bhagavad Gita, in the second canto, it says that even at the moment of death, at the one moment, your last moment, your last second, if you become fully Krishna conscious, if you fully devote yourself to Krishna, you can attain perfection. An example is given of Katswanga Maharaj.
He was alert about prime duty of life, prime duty.
So it is not, it doesn't matter how old you are, you can start at any age. Okay. Any other points?
The mind goes faster, but the body won't go.
So the mind must also become peaceful, situated in the mode of goodness. You have to overcome the tendencies of passion and ignorance. You see, old people, they're still passionate. You know, some of them are very always, you know, doing this and doing that. Like, you can't just sit down and be peaceful. You know, that's not the way you should be when you're old. Or ignorant. They all go into ignorance. You know, they sleep all the time. Or just like my grandparents, you know, they're just a little bit over 80. They sleep so much. You know, practically. You know, when you're old, you should be reducing these things. Prabhupada has pointed this out in previous purports. Early in the third canto, I think it is. Okay. Prabhupada points out that you have to reduce your eating and sleeping as you get older, not increase it. Okay, where are we up to now? Shaunaka inquired about the conversation between Vidura and Maitreya. There must have been narration of the spotless pastimes of the Lord. The hearing of such narrations is exactly like bathing the water of the Ganges, for it can free one from all sinful reactions. O Suta Goswami, all good fortune to you. Please narrate the activities of the Lord, which are all magnanimous and worth glorifying. What sort of devotee can be satiated by hearing the nectarian pastimes of the Lord? The Prabhupada mentions in the purport that Bhagavatam must be heard in the right mood. What is the description Prabhupada gives in this particular purport? One must see the Bhagavatam with?
That's the end of the question.
Yeah, that's, yeah, Prabhupada says that next. But first of all, the first sentence, what does he say? You must hear it with respect. But there must be the right mood in hearing the Bhagavatam. If you don't hear the Bhagavatam with the right mood, you do not get the benefit of hearing the Bhagavatam. If you're in a whimsical mood while hearing the Bhagavatam, you will not get the proper result. It's like sometimes you see devotees, they'll come to class, but they're not really interested in hearing. You know, fidgeting around and, you know, throwing flowers at each other and this kind of thing. But so the mood is not correct. So if the mood is not correct, you will not get the benefit. So Prabhupada says you must hear respectfully. Especially when a devotee is speaking, you must be respectful, you must listen. If you come to class, then you must hear respectfully. Not that devotees are falling asleep and, you know, doing all those kind of things in class. It's not appropriate, actually. But usually when I'm giving class, people don't fall asleep if I give my class. Because that's, you know, everyone here wants to hear. But sometimes, like, we give class in the morning. If someone's falling asleep, I just say, Prabhu, if you're tired, then just go and take rest. Just don't sleep in the Bhagavatam class. It's not appropriate. It's not the right mood of respect. But it's not the time for that kind of thing. And devotees are being willing to go on with all these kind of things. And, you know, I think one time I said to the devotees, because they, you know, throwing flowers at each other, all the cancer in the class. I said, Prabhu, you know, if you want to come and speak, I'll listen. You know, but I'm speaking now. So you should be respectful to the message of the Bhagavatam. You should listen respectfully. You know, if you don't want to hear it, just go and do something. But if you come to Bhagavatam class, you must respect the Bhagavatam. And that is the mood that Prabhupada is emphasizing here. And Prabhupada says that the Bhagavatam is always
fresh.
It is always sweet. Krishna actually received this benediction from his guru, Sandipani Muni. This is in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam. His guru blessed him when he returned his teacher's son from the ocean. Then Sandipani Muni blessed him and said, whatever you speak will always be fresh. And Prabhupada, sometimes Prabhupada would be on a plane and Prabhupada would be flying somewhere in the world, and Prabhupada would be reading his books. And the devotees would say to Prabhupada, "Prabhupada, why are you reading your books?" And Prabhupada said, "They are not my books, they are Krishna's books." So even a pure devotee, Prabhupada points out, when he reads these books, it will always be fresh. It never becomes boring. If you find it's becoming boring, then you have to analyze or become introspective about your own attitude. Because there is nothing hackneyed or boring about the Bhagavatam. It's just that you are lacking taste due to your material attachments.
Just like the example of Rupa Goswami gives of sugar candy.
Yeah. If someone does not have faith, they will not.
Mm-hmm. What about if the reading that I understand every word anyway in the 1 minute Polish, but I am unable to comprehend? If you know what I mean?
Mm.
Does mean I'm not ready?
No, it means that you have to hear it from devotees. You can read it by yourself, but you will not get as much benefit. It's hard to understand these things by yourself. Just like we come together all like this twice a week. We have this group. We come together because it is easier for us to understand it when we discuss it together. If you try to read it by yourself, you'll understand something, but it's much, many more things become clarified.
It's
when
not
you're
clicking, not breathing.
Yeah. So it means you have to hear it with the other devotees. Then it becomes more clear, because then you can ask your questions and you can hear, and then it becomes understandable.
And you can remember also more. By group discussion, more memories.
Yeah.
Mm.
Six cents. Okay.
After this, can we kind of acknowledge the refresh that we work together? For example, like sometimes you read the knowledge, but work together, kind of run.
Mm.
So every fresh means that stacking memories, or?
No, it doesn't mean that. Every fresh means that you can read it, but then when you read it again next time, you'll get more realizations or deeper realizations. In other words, you can read the Bhagavad Gita, but then you can read the Bhagavad Gita again. But when you read it, more will come out. And Prabhupada said it was always like that. Even for Prabhupada, when Prabhupada was perfect in his consciousness and his realization, but Prabhupada said when he read the Bhagavad Gita, he was getting fresh realizations. So that can only happen when God speaks. I'm being asked to speak by the great sages of Dharmisharanya, the son of Ramahashana, Suta Goswami, whose mind was absorbed in the transcendental pathway of the Lord said, "Please hear what I shall now speak." Suta Goswami continued, "Vidura, the descendant of Bharat, was delighted to hear the story of the Lord, who, having assumed by his own divine potency the form of a bull, had enacted the sport of lifting the earth from the bottom of the ocean and indifferently killing the demon Hiranyaksha." Vidura then spoke to the sage as follows. So in this purport,
Prabhupada defeats Mayavad philosophy. Prabhupada mentions in the bottom of the paragraph, he says, "The Mayavad idea that the living entity is the supreme absolute truth but has become covered by Maya is invalid, because Maya cannot be so great that it can cover the supreme. The covering capacity can be employed on the part and parcel of Brahman, not on the supreme Brahman." So this is one argument which is very conclusive, which destroys Mayavad philosophy. Sometimes the Mayavadis, they say that the supreme has become covered by Maya. So that is the philosophy which they preach. But actually it's not logical. Because if something is supreme, how can it become covered by something lesser? It is illogical. It's not a logical argument to say that something is supreme. They say all of us are minute particles of the Supreme Absolute Truth of Brahman, Brahma-jyoti. So if we are supreme, then how did we become covered by Maya? There's no logic to that. So this is one way to defeat Mayavada. Because if they're saying that we are supreme, we are God, we are one, then how that one, and this is the other way to defeat it. Krishna says within the Gita that spirit is sthanam. Sthanam means changeless. It doesn't change. So if spirit is one, and then they say fragmented, that's illogical. That's an illogical argument against spiritual authority. It's against Krishna's authority within the Gita. It's against the Vedic authority. They're saying everything is one, that is supreme, but then we'll become fragmented. Like that. So that is an illogical argument on their side. So his Mayavada philosophy can be defeated if he just understands the very basic points. So Prabhupada points out these basic points in order to allow us to defeat this Mayavada philosophy. So if someone is impersonal, if someone believes God is impersonal, then you can, if you learn these basic arguments, you can convince them. Like that. If someone is very staunch in person, they're very envious. Even if you explain these things to them, they'll still hold their impersonal theory. Like that. But if someone is on the border, if you understand these basic points, then you can bring them across a personalistic conception. Any points? Vidura said, since you know of matters inconceivable to us, tell me, O holy sage, what did Brahma do to create living beings after evolving the Prajapatis, the progenitors of living beings? Vidura inquired, how did the Prajapatis, such progenitors of living entities as Marichi and Swayambhu Manu, create according to the instructions of Brahma? How did they evolve this manifested universe? So at the end of the second canto, it was mentioned in the first verse of the 10th chapter that there are 10 subject matters of the Srimad Bhagavatam. Sagra, Visagra, Dana, Oshama, Udaya, Manvantara, Ishanukata, Nirodha, Nirodha, then Mukti, and then Ashraya. So, he is inquiring here about
Both.
Or Uthaya,
the creating,
because
creative
input,
creative input.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. Did you tell him about your Shanukata? Yeah. How about Nirodha? Yeah, primarily he's asking about Manvantara.
Manvantara?
Yeah. He's asking about Manu. Primarily that's what he's asking at this point. He's asking about Manu. What did Manu, how does Manu do? What is Manu's activities? How did the Prajapatis, the Manus, Manvantara, create according to the instructions of Brahma, and how did they evolve this manifested universe? So he's asking, how do they do it? How do they create? Like that. So this will be the beginning of the discussion, which will lead into canto, the rest of canto 3 and canto 4 and canto 5. It will all evolve from this subject matter. And many other subjects will be discussed, beginning from this point. Did they evolve the creation in conjunction with their respective wives? Did they remain independent in their action? Or did they all jointly produce it? Maitreya said, when the equilibrium of the combination of the three modes of nature was agitated by the unseen activity of the living entity, by Mahavishnu and by the force of time, the total material elements were produced. So, this has been discussed, this subject matter has been discussed in chapters 5 and 6 of this canto. And then again it was discussed in chapter 8. And now again it's been discussed in chapter 20. And it will be discussed again in chapter 20.
You could be right, it could be 24. But it is discussed again in chapter, I think it's 25. It could be 24.
So it's been discussed many times. So now we'll be discussing a very brief synopsis. We did go over this in great detail previously. In chapter 8, we went into very big detail. And chapter 5 and 6, we went into great detail also. Like that. So we're not going to go into great detail again. I think the chart's still up. Is it? Maybe they wrapped it off. Yeah, I think it's gone. I don't think it's gone. Oh, there it is.
Okay.
So remember all the detail. This was discussed previously. So basically, Prabhupada points out at the beginning of the paragraph that great personalities construct this universe on behalf of the Lord as a service to the Lord in order that the universe can be there for the conditioned soul to attempt to enjoy separately from
Krishna.
It is their desire. The conditioned souls have the desire to enjoy separately from God. So on behalf of the Lord, great personalities are given the potency to construct the universe on the Lord's behalf.
Okay.
So this is their service to the Lord. So why is it that the universe is constructed? Yeah, it's because we have a desire to enjoy separately from God. Now, how merciful is it that Krishna gives you such a large kshetra? Krishna mentions this in the Bhagavad Gita. Kshetra means a place, a domain. Krishna gives you such a large place in order to fulfill your desires. You want to be separate from God. You want to enjoy separately from God. You have no ability to fulfill your desires. Okay? As a tiny little jiva, you want to be separate from Krishna, but you have no ability to fulfill those desires. So Krishna creates an entire kshetra, like a huge universe. You know, just like last night, you know, in underground at the farm, I go to the bathroom. Our bathroom is outside. We have to go outside. So I come out sometimes like 3 in the morning, and I come out, you know, to go to the toilet. And I look up at the sky, and you can see the whole Milky Way. Yeah, when the moon is down, and when the moon's not bright, and then you can see all the stars. And when the night is clear, you can see the entire. And it's just, it's unbelievable. You know, how. You know, who created that?
Mm-hmm.
How powerful is the entity who created that? And you can see the Milky Way. Remember we read in, was it Canto 3? Or Canto 2? The Milky Way is the lotus, which emanates from Brahma's, goes to the 14th planet. You know, you see the Milky Way? It's like the, in the sky, when you look at the sky at night, if you can't really see it in Melbourne, if you come to the farm, I'll show you. You've seen it before, but. But you look like at the horizons, right? You don't see, it's all kind of clear, you just see stars. But then there's a big patch that goes right through the middle, almost directly above, and it's almost cloudy. It's like there's some white kind of misty cloud there. Right? The scientists say there's so many stars there that it looks like it's all almost like it's a form. It's actually the lotus is going through that section. And they are the planetary systems, right? Millions of stars. It is so powerful. Right? So God has created that just for you. Because you want to be separate from Him. But you don't have any ability to enjoy.
Just like you say, I want to enjoy separateness in Krishna, but how do you fulfill your desire? You have no ability to fulfill your desire. So Krishna gives you an entire universe and says, now go and enjoy. But when you become frustrated, then come back to me. So that is what Shastra is for. When we become frustrated, it teaches us how to regulate ourselves so that we can gradually overcome our disease and come back to Krishna. Like that. So Prabhupada gives many details in the purport about creation, but I won't go into it in detail because we've done it before. This chapter actually goes into some creative detail, so we will discuss something next week about creation. But I won't go into a lot of it again because we've done it. So I don't want to keep on.
Once the one of the Kapadapas is when they create the progeny on the on Earth, what out of 8.4 million species are all of them like, what is their nature? And what bodies they have?
What is their what?
Because they are given material bodies, right? The progeny, so because afterwards they will, according to their activities, they will get different bodies. To start with, they are given which body?
That's according to your karma from your previous lifetime. Then you get that particular form.
Okay, so
when the creation takes place again, then you take the form that you left off with last time. Okay. So everyone enters back into, all this is recorded within the subtle body of Lord Brahma. Quite an amazing thing.
What about those people who never heard of God? Like, I know some tribes in Africa or New Guinea. So that was their karma, to be born into those surroundings, but there is no God, nobody told them.
Yeah. That is their desire from their previous life. If you want to forget God, then he facilitates that. Then you can forget him. The material world is to help you forget God. So if you want to forget, then he will facilitate that. He will put you in the material world and then you can forget him. But then, after some lifetimes, if you want to come back to him, then he will give you some facility that you can begin to go back.
The reason I ask, because my younger daughter's partner, I never spoke to him about that, but should it not be that he does not believe in a God. I said, what do you mean? No, he's atheist, and but the person was born into this case of England or whatever, Australian family. So what will happen
to
that person? That's his desire.
From his previous life. It is said that Krishna says, Jnana Smritir Apohanam Cha. So it means that if you want to forget God, Krishna will give you that forgetfulness. He will help you to forget. If you want to remember him, he will allow you to remember. Okay. As empowered by the destiny of the jiva, the false ego, which is of three kinds, evolved from the mahat tattva, in which the element of rajas predominates. From the ego, in turn, evolved many groups of five principles. So this is what was discussed in previous chapters in the third canto, in great detail. This has all just been given in one verse, like that. Because it's just a synopsis of what was discussed previously. Right? Five groups of five. Okay. You should remember this. Separately unable to produce the material universe, they combined with the help of the energy of the Supreme Lord and were able to produce the shining egg. For over 1,000 years, the shining egg lay on the waters of the causal ocean in a lifeless state. Then the Lord entered it as Gavadakshay Vishnu. From the navel of the personality of Godhead, Garbhodakshaya Vishnu, sprouted a lotus flower effulgent like a thousand blazing suns. This lotus flower is the reservoir of all conditioned souls. And the first living entity who came out of the lotus flower was the omnipotent Brahma.
So, Prabhupada mentions that it was the jivas who caused the lotus flower to sprout from the navel of
Garbhodakshaya Vishnu.
That was when they were in his body. Mm-hmm. It's discussed when they were in his body, so it was like a bluish blackish, that was all the sinful desire. But then it says when it comes from his body, that is because of their aggregate karma. Mm-hmm. Huh? Just like all of us have so much desire. Very much, the material world is very much predominated by the material world is predominantly rajas. Predominantly. Mm-hmm. Everyone is very passionate. Even the human side at the moment is predominantly passionate. Right? People are so passionate, it's very difficult for them to even sit still. You always have to be doing something, always have to be active, let's do this. So, when all that is put together, that aggregate passion, then that comes forth from the navel of Garbhodakshaya Vishnu. That is the lotus stem. Prabhupada points out in the purport, it is as effulgent as thousands of suns. Because each jiva is spirit soul. Spirit is effulgent. So therefore when it all comes out, it's like an aggregate effulgence. But then all that effulgence becomes covered by what is that effulgence covered by? By the material energy. Just like Srila Prabhupada, sometimes even in photographs you can see, like you can see his halo. It actually gets captured on photographs. So there's a picture up there, used to be up in the sannyasi room in the corner. And there's one picture, I think Prabhupada Vishnu Swami is behind Prabhupada, where he's a brahmachari or a devotee. And you see Prabhupada, and just the way the camera is, you can actually see like an effulgence coming off Prabhupada. It's like there's a halo coming off it. One time we've mentioned this before, then two policemen walk past Prabhupada in a morning walk, and Prabhupada was walking and he had many disciples behind him. And Prabhupada walked past the policemen and said good morning, and they said good morning. And then as the two policemen walked down and the Prabhupada passed, then his disciples who were following behind, they heard one policeman say to the other policeman, did you see that man? He was glowing. I mean, like effulgence. Prabhupada was actually effulgence. So sometimes you see the wounds are very effulgent. Right, and other times you see they're very not this is because the soul is covered by the material energy. But when the soul becomes more uncovered, you see the body becomes more effulgent.
So he was glowing because he was a good soul.
Yeah, because he was pure soul. When you're pure, then the soul glows. That you see people are very spiritual, very pure. They've got, like you see Jesus always has the halo around him. Angels always have the halo because they're soulless. Okay, the final verse. When that Supreme Personality of Godhead who was lying on the Garbhodaka ocean entered the heart of Brahma, Brahma brought his intelligence to bear. And with the intelligence invoked, he began to create the universe as it was before. So Prabhupada mentions in the second paragraph that Lord Brahma practically becomes as powerful as
Vishnu.
Practically as powerful as God himself. Right? If God desires, you can become practically as powerful as him.
if he desires. Right? He, if you are a pure servant of him, and he can entrust you with his Shakti, then he can make you practically as powerful as he himself. So you see, Brahma, Prabhupada points out in the third point, he is practically as powerful as Krishna. Because he has practically like an all-knowing consciousness. Right? How could you know, just like all of us are thinking something right at this moment, and Lord Brahma is so powerful, he can actually understand what each one of us is thinking simultaneously right at this moment. Lord Brahma is that powerful. That's practically like God. He's been given all the power of God. So you can only get God's power if you become a faithful soul. And the more faithful you become to Krishna, to Guru and Krishna, then that much you become empowered by Guru and Krishna to act on their behalf.
And then Prabhupada points out at the end of the purport that the jivas are created according to their karma from the previous creation. So wherever the jivas leave off in the previous creation, that's where they take off in this creation. So all of us take birth, right? And then Lord Brahma, he creates 8 million 400,000 species of life. So how does he choose which one becomes a giraffe? No. He gets all the prajapatis. And they get dice. And they all get them. And they say, what will this one become? No. How does it all take place? Because it's all done from the previous desires. Whatever you desired previously, whatever desire you had, then that's what you will take birth as in this lifetime. So those who took off from their previous creation and left off in a particular body, then they take off in that body in this particular lifetime.
So in plain English, there is nothing I can do in the present life because of my desire of in the past.
No, it means that you can't change the body you have now. Just like you're in this body, like none of us can change our body. Yeah, I can't say, you know, I like Mathura's body better, I want to be in his body now. Yeah, you can't do that, right? Your karma means you cannot change what you got. But you can change what you get next, that's the point.
But I mean, to be faithful to God or to be more sincere, because they are so-called better and good people.
Yeah.
So that means Is that happening because of past life?
No, that's happening because of what you decide to do now. If you want to come closer to Krishna, you can do that from now on. But if you want to go further away from Krishna, you can do that from now on also. So the point is you cannot change what you are in this life, but you can change what you'll become in your next life. In your next life you can get a spiritual body. Right, if you practice devotional service to Krishna.
No birth, old age, death and demise.
At the present we carry the bad karma, so the bad karma, you know, like which they can make us create bad bodies in the future which they are not clear. This devotional process can help us clear them out and we can have a better fortune in the future.
So we don't have to read the consequences of previous life action. It's very
important to be engaged in
devotion
for many reasons.
Any other questions or comments? Okay, so there'll be no class tomorrow night because tomorrow night is... It's an undefined issue. So tomorrow is one of the most auspicious days of the year, and one sannyasi explained many years ago while he was giving class, he said that if you want to get the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu, then you have to pray I'm going to wait for Acharya's appearance day for the mercy of Nityananda Prabhu. So Advaita Acharya's appearance day was last week, last Wednesday. So on that day, I should have told you this last time, but this is the prince week, remember this for future years. Then if you pray to Advaita Acharya, you get the mercy of Lord Nityananda on his appearance day. And if you pray to Lord Nityananda on his appearance day, then you'll get the mercy of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on his appearance day. And his appearance day will be 1 month from tomorrow. Not exactly, but approximately. It's 1 month away from that. And then, if you pray to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu on his appearance day, then later in the year, then Baladev Purnim will come, and Janmashtami will come, and Radhashtami will come. So all these things work in sequence. So we pray to Lord Nityananda Prabhu, then we can approach Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and receive his message. So tomorrow is an extremely auspicious day, and there is no personality more merciful than Nityananda Prabhu in the creation. Even though you say Mahaprabhu is Patita Parvana, but Nityananda Prabhu is even more merciful than. So we are the most fallen personalities. So tomorrow we should take advantage of the mercy of Lord Nityananda and try to approach Lord Chaitanya for his mercy. Nityananda Prabhu ki. So we'll see you tomorrow night, but not in this room, in the temple room. Shri Prabhupada ki.